Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
There are other places to talk about movies and films and TV and how you feel about art that isn't social media. See, my problem with the whole quote-unquote spoiler gate is that y'all get on social media, you say something that's pivotal to the film or pivotal to the experience of the art, but then you leave no valued criticism behind it. For example, we're talking about Avengers Endgame. Y'all will jump out and say, oh, Thanos is now Terrence Howard, but won't give a valid opinion about how you felt about the film, about different themes that occurred throughout the film, or foreshadowing, or Easter eggs. All you want to say is you want to spoil the art. I don't get it. I'll be honest with you. I don't get it. Call your friends. Text your mans. Don't ruin an artistic experience that's predicated on particular facts from the art if you're not going to offer a valued opinion at the same time. It just bothers me, man. I'll be honest with you. It just bothers me. It just seems like y'all want attention and clout.
But it's just so fun to tweet about things after I've seen it. Like, why is it so fun?
I mean, because you want to... I hear what you're saying, Alexia. You want to experience that fellowship around the same art,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I do the same thing. My only issue is... you also have other ways to communicate it. If you want to talk to your friends about something that happened in the art that's a little spoilery, give them a call. You got to tweet about it? Yeah, you know what I mean?
No, I don't.
I mean, me and social media, we're going to talk about digital minimalism today, but me and social media, whoa, you know what I'm saying? We are, I don't know. I'm on a thin line. I'm telling you, there's a trend coming. Anyway, I'm sorry, y'all. My bad. Welcome to Over the Shoulder Podcast. I'm your boy, BMO Brown. I'll be joined by my co-host, Backpack Matt, here in a minute. We are a weekly podcast where we give you the opportunity to eavesdrop on a conversation about creativity, ups, the downs, the inspirations, the distractions, all that good stuff. Again, my name is BMO Brown. I'm your host for today. My boy, Backpack Matt, is going to be joining us. We're coming to you live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel, Full Service Radio. We got our... We got our girl Alexia on the production ones and two. What's up, girl? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, it's been a great 2 weeks. I'm sorry I left y'all last week. You know, real niggas go through real things. So, you know what I'm saying? Had to step off for a week. But here we are again. Again, my host, Backpack Matt, will be joining us here in a few minutes. But before he gets into it, let's go ahead and start with the word of the day. Today's word of the day is brought to you by a dictionary app that is yet to sponsor us. Backpack Matt just walked up in the studio. What's up, baby?
What up?
Word of the day. Today's word is guttle.
Guttle?
Guttle. A verb. To catch by grouping with the hands or under rocks along a riverbank. Guttle. To catch fish by groping with the hands. Whoa. As under rocks. Leave the fish alone,
what's
man.
What's yesterday's word? Word of the day.
From yesterday's word of the... Hold on. How do you do that? I don't like today's word of the day. You know what? I like yesterday's word of the day. Okay. Yesterday's word of the day is... clown car.
Ooh.
Clown car. A noun. A group whose size seems absurdly excessive for the purported function of the group and whose effectiveness is therefore questionable.
Ooh.
Ooh. Like, does the DC government have a clown car worth of representation?
How many people got up out of Broccoli City Fest looking like a clown car? Six of y'all.
Yo, I didn't hear good
things. We's been through the struggle.
I didn't hear good
finally
things
on the way home.
I didn't hear good things about Broccoli City, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, I mean, they also had to compete with something in the water during the same weekend in the same region. And I mean, Something in the Water got rained out the first day, so.
And I still heard better things about some. We'll get to that in a second, man. We're getting that in a second, man. I'm glad. What's up, man? What's up, dog?
It's just good to see my bro, man. Everything's good.
Everything's good.
We, like, week removed from SBO. Thanks for coming out.
Oh, man.
Got that recap video finally done. About to drop that today or tomorrow. It's looking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is good, bro. Like, no complaints. Shout out to Jiggy. He couldn't be here today, but we got a photographer in house normally now with the show.
Jiggy.
Shout out Jiggy. So, you know, we got.
Shout out Tom, our third Tom podcast member.
Hopefully, Tom should be back soon, though. I've talked to him. He might be back on the show very soon.
Oh, word? So. Is the postal? Is it not working?
Yeah, I don't know if the postal is serving him right. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah. So, shout out to last episode. We had it was a Children of Pharrell episode.
Okay.
Thank you, Alexia, for chiming in. We really appreciated it. We just had a first time trying out the round table. And it worked out, man.
Okay, so, good.
I think this is a pretty dangerous podcast because we take on so many different shapes and forms and styles, bro. So just keep it going.
Watch out. Alexia, if you don't mind, can you cue up water for us? We're going to get into a quick musical break. Me and Mac will talk about what the hell we're going to talk about. And we're going to come back with some more over-the-shoulder podcasts. We'll be right back with you.
Word.
Oh man, Panama really got a dope track on the hand with that one joint. Make sure y'all check out Panama at Earth to Panama on Instagram and Twitter and all our social medias to check out the release of that single. We'll be dropping that real soon. That's Water by Panama. Make sure y'all support, man.
You know, so it's kind of an overcast day today, but yeah. the song still fits.
Yeah, it does. It
like, really complements that vibe still. You know, probably know it wasn't intended for that. It's really good music.
Yeah, got a little bounce. We was in here bouncing during the break. All right, Matt, you mind if I go a little too deep, man?
Do your thing. I'm going to step back.
All right, cool. All right, what's up, y'all? As a content provider, I find it pivotal to constantly investigate that which inspires, confounds, and disrupts creativity. Each week, I'm going to explore one creative concept, deconstruct it to its creative atoms, and analyze its foundations in hopes of expanding the discovery of the creative process. This week, Black Gentrifiers. Right? So I want to remain as objective as possible. So I'm going to start with some definitions. Black, adjective. Commonly used term to define the race of African descended people with noticeable melanin intake, right? Gentrifier, a noun, a person to alter a deteriorated urban neighborhood through the buying and renovation of houses and stores by upper or middle income families or individuals, raising property values, but often displacing low income families and small businesses. You put those two things together and you have black folks who are trying to alter urban neighborhood through ownership and better commerce. In the last 2 weeks, I've heard from several respected opinions about the disgust towards black gentrifiers and the celebration of black wealth, as almost they are juxtaposed against each other and they can't exist at the same time. The argument of disgust is based on the structure of capitalism. As long as there is a top, there will be a bottom. That's the basics of capitalism. The fear is that black wealth will displace low income and small businesses. On one hand, I get it. If there's only so much pie and black wealth are taking up that pie, where does that put those who have less pie? The argument for praise is based more on a nationalist mindset. I'm sorry. If I got, we got, right? That black ownership is incredibly beneficial towards black progression. Isn't the answer to years of oppressions the freedom to control our destiny, our commerce, and our communities? I'm not sure. I'm gonna be honest with you, Matt. I'm not sure if I have an opinion. Truth be told, I'm just glad that the conversation is back in the forefront of black consciousness.
Yeah.
Every time this conversation emerges, as we grow tenfold, I remind you of deconstruction right after the Civil War. I remind you of the Black Broadway era that led you to the Harlem Renaissance era. I remind you of Black Wall Street in Oklahoma and the Memphis construction. If you don't know these things, I definitely encourage you to Google them right now. But here's where it gets cool to me, though. As it pertains to creativity, the writing is already on the wall. We, as a black race, want to exist outside of the infrastructure that was curated for us. If you know the history of black music, pretty much every American genre is generated from black music. So when I hear Lil Nas X's song, when I see K. Michelle appeal to that country mic, that country open mic, I see a resurgence of trying to buy back the things in which we own. So I don't necessarily have an argument at this point, and I want to invite some guests over the next couple of weeks to discuss this point some more. But I think we got it wrong. I don't think, as black racism, I think black gentrification is something that we don't currently have, but something that we should strive towards. For now, that's as deep as I'll go. If you can't find it, swim for it.
I fuck with that. I love that topic. I mean, we were talking about that while the song was on Jay during his B-Sides 2 concert at Webster Hall last week.
Yeah.
And the freestyle that resonated the most was almost in tribute or homage to Nipsey and right. The bar was gentrify your own hood
right.
before they do it.
Right.
Eminent domain, right? Like you pull up if you have the means mm-hmm. to come alongside your people and mm-hmm. set up shop and provide resources with them in mind.
Right.
I think that's one thing. Because I consider myself, if that's the case, I'm from PG, I'm from Forsville, I'm a black gentrifier, I live in D.C.,
right.
technically. But when I live and I exist in the space, I'm interacting with my black neighbors, I'm interacting with the homeless people in the street every day, I'm interacting with the shop owners, I'm paying with a different type of respect.
Right.
There's a different type of empathy that's involved.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you can even compare black. I don't even think black gentrification is really a thing, honestly, because that assumes that if a black person moves into a house, they're raising up the housing, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're raising up the property value.
And historically, isn't that
right? Historically, you get too many of us. That's it's not the case.
It brings down the
you
property.
You gotta have buku bread in unison to do that. And you can only do that in certain areas like Beverly Hills and shit.
That's or PG.
Or PG.
Yeah, I've seen. I went to PG. I don't get to make it out to PG very often, but I saw probably the most beautiful. We driving up to my man's like godfather's birthday or some shit like that, right? We drive into this gated community, and it's like all these turns and all these big ass houses, some cookie cutter houses, some like mansion looking houses, right?
A lot of variety.
Right. And I'm driving around, I see one black family. Okay, that's the one black family on the block. That's what I say to myself. Then I see a group of black kids riding their bikes down the hill, and I'm like,
right.
Then I see another black family, And then it dawns on me, oh shit, this is a black neighborhood.
Right.
This is black wealth.
Right.
Right. I don't see that as interfering with something that's happening in Southeast.
Right.
I don't see it. Maybe we need to have somebody on here that can explain it to us in another way.
I mean, black gentrifiers aren't the cause of the raising in houses. If anything, they're getting, I don't know, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're not benefiting from the rising of house prices.
No. Most. No,
so,
we're not.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. If we're moving in, we're not really gentrifying. We probably just incur a higher rent.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But the other argument is that we are distracting from other small businesses that are happening in D.C.
I don't know, man. I just think, so they talk about what I do for my 9-to-5, they talk about the digital transformation a lot, right?
Okay.
Like, basically, we know this as things are changing. People are going, doing less hardware, more software.
Right.
You know, more on our phone, more mobile.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I feel like that transformation is happening in real life, too, because the digital transformation means the blurring of lines in terms of previous industries and also, you know, more collaboration amongst entities.
Right.
So who's to say that when a black gentrifier, quote unquote, comes into the city, that they won't create resources and programs and situations that are going to benefit not only the locals, but also D.C.-based black businesses?
Right.
Like, I mean, if blacks are communal like we say we are, naturally, then shouldn't that be the case?
Yeah. Like, give us a shot.
And, I mean, historically, PG is PG because of the D.C. government that, you know, in the federal government that was able to afford a stimulus of jobs.
That's right.
With security. Four people in D.C.
That's right.
And eventually they moved out to PG.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're still descendants of we got the same grandma. What are we talking about?
With that being said, Matt, what's in the bag, bro?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to go a little lighter with it. I know, so this week was a pretty epic weekend.
Okay, what happened?
Right? But not for the reasons that maybe people are thinking. Wasn't something in the water.
Wasn't Broccoli City?
Wasn't Broccoli City, it wasn't even Avengers Endgame.
Hold on.
Let me get my real. That's the bag. Okay, I'm sorry. Is. Sorry, BMO.
It's all good.
So no, it wasn't. It wasn't even Game of Thrones season 3.
Wow.
Season 8, episode 3. It was URL Smack Cassidy vs. Goods at the mansion in Atlanta.
This is battle rap, right?
On Saturday, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Shout out Smack, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to Battle Rap, you know what I'm saying?
I'm listening, bro.
I know BMO goes in his wrestling bag all the time.
I do.
To get my Battle Rap bag. Okay, so shout out to URL, the Ultimate Rap League. If you grew up watching Smack DVDs or you got them off of like LimeWire and stuff to look at some of the freestyles or the battles, you know, the J Mills versus Murder Mook, you know, Murder Mook versus Loaded Lux, Sirius Jones versus Murder Mook, you name it, Jen. If you were from that era and you continue to be a fan of Battle Rap, you probably watched URL Resolution, which was the name of their pay-per-view event that took place in Atlanta. It was the first time that they did battle rap via URL because URL brings a certain, you know, vibe of battle rap, certain audience. They're the big dogs.
Okay.
First time they did it in Atlanta, they sold out. And, you know, I wanted to say that the growth from a business model of battle rap, that a sport or a competitive kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, form of music, that often gets clowned, you know what I'm saying? But they had one of the dopest pay-per-view streams with no disruptions that I've ever experienced.
Really?
and they were also sponsored by Uber Eats. So not so people who were watching the live event on pay-per-view, you know, somewhere in DC could get use the Uber Eats code and get a discount on their food while they watch the matches.
Yeah,
right.
That's the bad.
You know, and it's very similar to wrestling in that regard, like the competitive sport, the storylines,
right.
You know, but it just hasn't gotten that mainstream appeal yet. But the tech and the business ingenuity are there. So I just wanted to say that and leave that there just in terms of my tech stuff, right?
Okay.
But let's get back to the bar. So Cassidy the Hustler, we know him. My drinking, my two-step, hotel.
Yep.
6 minutes of death.
I'm a hustler,
exactly.
Homie. Yeah.
So anyway, Cassidy comes from that ilk, too. He was in the Smack DVDs back in the day, but he wasn't battling most of the time. He was freestyling because that's what Smack DVDs did. They ran up on mostly New York artists, like, at the time, who were out in the streets or who had their homies with them. And it was real voyeur-style, street-style kind of interviews.
That's dope.
You know, so they would interview the Lox and Y.O.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They'd go up to Yonkers and interview them out on the streets with them and their homies. Or they would go run up on Remy Ma before she went to jail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and get those freestyles. So Smack was one of the pioneers of that back in the day. He, you know, the street DVDs in New York, he was that dude. At the end of those DVDs, each time would be a battle. Most of the time it happened like a record shop or like it'd be a one-off small location.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually those became the most exciting aspects of the tapes. Nobody was really buying the tapes, the DVDs for the rappers. They were buying them for the battles at the end.
Right.
And thus, really, battle rap took off, you know, and this was right after 8 Mile, but fast forward another 12 years, here we are today.
Okay.
Cassidy went through a lot. You know, he's not really a major artist anymore. You know, we don't really hear of him.
That's true.
And it's been some time. And he decided to step back in the battle rap ring.
Really?
And versus a very formidable opponent named Goods, who was somebody who's been consistently considered a legend in battle rap over the past 10 years because he stuck around.
Okay.
Cassidy kind of left, got his deal, started rapping, and never got, you know, any stick time, never stepped foot in the ring again. So he came back.
Oh, so it's like the return.
Right. So,
okay, no, I'm juiced now. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Yeah, yeah.
Context. All right, I got you. So check this out. Cassidy raised the bar in terms of promoting the event.
Okay.
You got to, you know, you're a fan of wrestling.
I am.
You got to promote
the
fight.
You do.
It's a lot of work that you put in. It's like a rollout.
Yeah.
Right. To create anticipation and excitement to see you. And, you know, Cassidy came through just with this almost Trump-like, you just Teflon, you can't with me.
Really?
Attitude, like just talking shit the whole time. Just like, and you know, most people who like Joe Buttons and other rappers who stepped in the battle rap ring, they came in with a lot more humility.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, and they've all fallen. So for
him to
just come out guns blazing, you know, knowing that there have been rappers in the past who failed, the Joe Buttons, the, what's my man who battled LL Cool J back in the day?
Can't remember.
That
nigga though.
Fuck him.
Yeah. That's how good he was.
Anyway, you know what I'm saying? So Cassidy was just like on every single battle rap small platform that did news or blogging, he did interviews with him. He was out in the streets. He did video interviews with all the small platforms that mattered. He was on the online radio shows. He did everything. And most of the people that are normal battle rappers just don't do that. They don't put in that effort. So off top, he came in with a lot of goodwill. But like I said, Goods was the legend. He wasn't a legend because of how crazy he was, but because he's consistently won. You know, he's one of those fighters. You know, just surprisingly wins, really good defense. You know, because he's the type of battle rapper that'll just style on you. And no matter how many lyrical miracles you got, he can just defuse all that shit by like clowning your fit. You know, one of them type dudes.
Yeah.
So
Floyd Mayweather.
Right. Yeah, okay, exactly.
It sounds like The Rock versus Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, that's what it sounds like right now. Okay, I'm with it.
So all right. So let's get to the battle. All right. Cassidy had a great first round.
Yeah.
Right. It felt like that old Cass, right? Like it was like, it just felt nostalgic.
In his bag.
He was in his bag. And also it was like, it was his first time back. He had done all this promo. We had loved him from his bars from back in the day. A lot of his bars kind of shaped the earlier cadences of battle rap. So he had a lot of goodwill that first round, and we applauded that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then Goods came out and styled on him and showed him.
Yeah.
You know, how battle rap really was.
This is
so,
where we are now.
You know, but Cash used the same style that he used from 10 years ago. If you don't really care about battle rap, but you can remember like a Cash song, it's pretty much a Cash song. And honestly, he was booed the subsequent next two rounds.
Really?
Consistently throughout. And he never stopped battling. He's never stopped rapping.
Yeah.
But he was consistently booed. And I thought about it. I'm like, all right, well, the bars aren't bad.
Okay.
But so why, and it's kind of the same bars from the first round.
Yeah.
So why are they getting booed in the second and third? And, you know, I think this could be like a microcosm or maybe a metaphor for life. But I looked at one of these blogs that looked at like the rundown after the battle. And they said, you know, after you compare their bars side by side, you may lean towards Cassidy because he just technically the bars were might have been better.
Right.
However, in those 10 years, the game has changed.
Ooh. Let's go, Matt. Let's go.
We're not battling out on like street top basketball courts and shit no more. We're in mansions. We're in stadiums. We're, you know, small venues that can hold like 2,000 people.
Right.
You know, these are people who are sitting there to see a performance.
Right.
They want to see storyline. They want to hear angles. You know, they want to hear a real debate.
Bars. Yeah, yeah.
Not just bars.
Interesting.
And interestingly enough, you know, they said, hey, you know, that shit might work the first round. Right?
Yeah.
Just out of nostalgia, we'll give you that. But you can't come back after taking a hiatus in the same place that you left off. And that's where I think a lot of artists across so many different mediums mess up.
Because they think
that when they come back, they can just come back on the trajectory that they were at before.
No.
If you decide to take a hiatus, that comes with a cost.
That's true.
That goodwill that you were building up is going to dissipate. So in order to make that back, you got to come back 10 times better than niggas thought you could ever do. You got to come back with a totally different style. You got to come back with innovation, disruption, almost taking your old style and throwing that in the trash, because that hiatus really means the death of that era.
Yeah.
So to try and recreate that era is just it's futile, because the players who were in that era aren't the same as they are today.
Wow.
You know, it might not be, you know, in style and also in actual people. Like those people who you might have ran with or considered competition or peers when, you know, before you took that artistic break or that creative break, you know, they've elevated over those 4 or 5 years or those 4 or 5 months when you didn't. Or maybe they gave up and they're out the game and there's somebody new that you got to worry about. Ooh. So I think the big thing is to just understand that it doesn't matter how nice you are technically, whatever accolades you got in the past, none of that shit really matters when you step back in the ring and it's time to go. You got to make sure that you acknowledge the things that you've done in the past, but completely scrap that shit and start some shit that's going to impress a whole new audience.
Hell yeah.
So just keep that in mind. That's my in the bag.
Hell yeah, bro. Hell yeah, man. See, that always... You got me speechless right now, because that's so true. Like, and you see it in artists now who try to take a break and come back, like a Kanye. Kanye takes a break, comes back. He's not the same Kanye from College Dropout, Graduation, Yeezus,
right?
A Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. He's not the same guy,
right?
And for that, he can always continue to come back per se and be bigger than he was before,
right?
But it also makes me think, like a guy like Nas. Can Nas ever quote unquote come back? Doing the same style since
he's been consistent too, though, so it's like I don't know with Nas. I can say the easy one with Kanye is early on, before like albums like Ye,
yeah,
he was ahead of that and by constantly changing up the style,
right? You know, right,
saying? Like,
right,
but like not including the trilogy for me, which is, you know, College Dropout, Late Registration, Graduation, right?
Of course.
But
of course.
Even Graduation
was different.
Miles different from
College Dropout.
College Dropout.
It was.
You know, and then he was like, all right, well, niggas expect me to do this on the fourth one. I'm going to hit him with this.
I'm going to hit him with something else.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When he started doing the Yeezus. You know Yeezus,
808. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's people always would critique the style at first. So with Wayne, with Rebirth, right?
Right.
Like in hindsight, like.
Rebirth was tight.
Rebirth is not a bad album. And it was a precipice, or it was an impetus for many other rock-infused albums. Like, right. How can you say that Uzi is not inspired by some shit that Wayne did?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But yeah, not to stray away, like, it's important to know, like, yo, when you take a break, you probably took a break for a reason. Like, you're not taking, you know, you shouldn't go back to the same shit, bro.
No.
Like, acknowledge that, acknowledge the trophies, put them shits up somewhere nice, and keep it moving. And you got to go double as hard as you did before.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
So...
Wow.
And that's what I'm learning too. I think we're all learning, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's actually a major part of the creative process is renewal.
Yeah.
How do you come back? Like, you did one project, how do you come back?
Right.
We got a special guest in the house. We about to get him hooked up here in a minute. Alexa, if you don't mind, can you cue up? Did you get the song I just emailed you? Okay, cool. Can you cue up Talk Shows on Mute again by Panama? We're going to have that play. We're going to be coming right back with a special guest and more Over the Shoulder podcast. Panama, another one. I'm telling you, y'all, make sure y'all look out for my girl Panama, Earth to Panama, on all social media platforms. Check her out. She's got that song, Talk Shows on Mute, and our first song, Water, that's coming out soon on her special EP. So be on the lookout for that. I know it makes you feel some type of way, so make sure you get into it.
Very dope.
We have a special guest in the building. We got Mr. Maps Glover. What's up, baby?
Yo, so good to be here.
Yo, what's popping? Yo. So I know who you are. I know how big and pivotal you are to the visual arts space in D.C. But tell the people what's going on in Map's world?
Oh my God. So I've been on the map for a while.
Ha.
Been in DC for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of trying to figure out a space for the political and the anti-establishment, and really trying to find a way to communicate both of those worlds and find a bridge.
Sweet.
Yeah. So recently I've been doing a lot of performance art. Most recently I've been working on this project called Jump for the Life.
Okay.
With me and another artist, Timoteo Murphy.
Okay.
Super exciting. Timoteo Murphy, he's a photographer, he's a videographer.
Okay.
And so this project that we're working on really addresses police brutality.
Okay.
And so for the last 2 years I've been documenting all the people that have been killed by police violence.
Oh wow.
And folding physical planes. So last year I folded 996 planes.
Wow.
Yeah, we exhibited at Transformer Gallery.
Wow.
This year, up as of last night, there are 316 people that are killed.
Oh man.
And so we have been putting together this project, like physically jumping for these people's lives, as if we're the spirit that, you know, is embodying those people. Yeah, it's a lot.
That's so heavy, man. No, it's not a lot. It's necessary.
It's
brother.
So necessary.
It's necessary,
yeah,
brother.
No.
And one thing I appreciate about you most is like you are really, I see you as really like the forefront of like performance and visual art that's happening in the city. And I don't think that gets a lot of like attention. So give me the smoke, brother. What's the smoke in the visual art and performance art world?
Oh my God. I know we're going to get to this a little bit later, but on top of the fact that most artists aren't even being paid to show their work,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think is a very important component of, you know, being an artist anywhere. You know,
right.
you need to be compensated for what you're doing.
Yeah.
On top of that, there aren't a lot of performance artists. So trying to navigate space and finding space for what I'm doing and having people understand the value of it
right.
is always kind of a interesting thing, where people just want you to come and they feel like they're doing you a favor for letting you, you
right.
know, come in and do it. But, you know, when I think of performance artists in DC specifically, but then just overall, I mean, I know people nationally know like Marina Abramovic, but
right.
when I think of performance artists, I start thinking about Dred Scott. So Dred Scott.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Dred Scott is a beast, man. He's been doing performance art for maybe about 20, 30 years. He did this one piece. Well, his career like really took off when he did this exhibition. I think it was in Florida, but he had took this American flag and just put it on the ground and had people do literally whatever they wanted to the flag.
Right.
The president at the time, like, wrote a statement talking about how his piece was disruptive and it was anti-American.
Right.
And he was just really taking ownership of the object itself. So people like Dred Scott, who has been, like, drenched down by water hoses and burned
wow.
the Declaration of Independence just to say, you know, shit needs to stop. You know, we need to kind of rethink about
right.
what we're, you know, agreeing to as citizens of this country.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's why I find visual and performance art so pivotal, because it does raise those questions. You got to have people who are brave enough, bold enough, artistic enough to express a message to the people that they can understand and interpret and then live through in their own. The fact that you folded 996 planes. What?
So,
you know how, like, I'm so heavy. You're thinking about every person that's been attacked or killed through police brutality, and you're making paper planes for each one of those people individually. That just, man, that's just, like, it's so, I'm appreciative for it, bro.
Yeah,
like,
man, I mean, it's real. So the first time we did the plane folding, we did it about 4 or 5 times. The first time was in the community garden
right.
here in D.C., and I sat there for 7 hours. Like, the rain was coming down. It was
yeah.
kind of crazy, bro. The rain was coming down. We was just sitting there for hours and just folding the planes. You know, I feel like I'm just, like, blessed because I'm it's just early right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know.
Oh, so you got you.
Like,
you got
to be, like, a technique, like rubber gloves or some shit, reduce the friction. Or,
oh, my God. But when I tell you, like, it's muscle memory at this point.
Yeah,
like, I
of
can
course,
do it right. with just, you know.
You could just fold a plane, like,
just,
behind your back probably.
Bro, I'm trying to tell you, I can just fold a plane. But so this exhibition that's coming up later on in November to December in Reading, Pennsylvania,
okay.
it really addresses the same issue, but we've been in contact with the police, some police precincts in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Really? How do they feel about it?
They're not.
If you could see how he looks right now.
Oh, my God. Okay. Eyes are bugging.
Yeah. Right.
There's a slight lean to that.
But, you know, it's not the... I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's real, but at the same time, you know, we sent a few emails, and they're not as responsive.
Okay.
But I really want to extend to them that this is not necessarily a judgment of you. It's addressing the culture itself. Like, right, if you're not responsible, if you're not, you know, somebody who is contributing to this number, then what is the problem?
Whatever is wrong, this is a result of it.
Yeah.
I'm not here to tell you what's wrong. I'm here to show you the results.
I'm here to show you exactly what... Here at 996 Plane Player.
Yeah, nigga, this is the
end
game.
What are we doing
now?
This
is it, yeah.
Right. This is the end game. Right.
I mean, and regardless, so we want to... So we're going to be at in Reading, Pennsylvania at Albright University.
Nice.
And at the Friedman Gallery.
Okay.
And so we want to have both of these installations, so with the 996 planes, both in the university and in the police precinct. And just to say, like, okay, we see you, we hear you.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be for that long, but regardless, I already know, like, if I have to make 996 planes or however many people, because if the number stays at 316, I will be so happy.
Yeah.
If we put up these planes all around the city,
yeah,
then we don't, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to be, people are going to be held accountable anyway. You know what
you're
I'm saying?
See it. Like, it's going to be with you.
You can't ignore it. So, yeah. I mean, it's a simple gesture, but at the same time, it's impactful visually. You know, right. I feel like in my work, I'm always trying to create these, like, aesthetic realities, okay?
That's
coin that
one. You heard it first. Reality. First time I've heard it.
That's the first time I heard
aesthetic reality.
Seriously, wow. I'm creating these aesthetic realities that I have a very thick art visual experience. Like, you can clearly tell it's art, but when you dive deeper into it, you know, the content that we're talking about is difficult, but it makes it a little bit easily digestible. So, I really want everyone who is kind of listening to be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
Be cognizant of how we're interacting with each other, because we're literally all in this together. We all have different backgrounds or whatever the case, but, you know, having living in a police state is not good for anybody.
Right.
You know, I always ask people the question, like, when you hear sirens, does it represent, like, danger or safety for you?
Mm.
You know, like, in both of those spaces, you know, there's a dangerous component to wanting to feel safe. But at the same time, I know when I have friends that, you know, live in certain neighborhoods around the city, gentrification, who, you know, feel so confident and comfortable when they say, thank God the police are here right now.
Right.
You know?
And people say that?
People have said that.
Oh, wow.
To me. I'm like, cute. Wow.
Wow, okay.
So, okay. So, you know.
Maybe you shouldn't live here.
Right. Well, we gotta wrap up, Maps. It was lovely talking to you on the show. Tell the people how they can support you and where they can find you.
You can find me at Maps Glover on all the platforms. You know. Just find me there.
Just find me
Instagram,
there.
Instagram, Twitter.
I got you. Matt, looks like.
So I added another segment to wrap up with for the, go ahead. You already showed the Twitter information, but or the social information, but I want to do each week something called Tools of the Trade.
Okay.
So each of us go around saying our social platforms. Maps, you've already done your thing, but also add in something that's a tool of the trade for you. It's not necessarily a direct tool of the trade. But, for example, last week I said it was my camera backpack with different compartments to hold my lenses.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
But Steele, who was also on the show last week, said his CBD pen.
Mm.
So you feel what I'm saying? Like, with that type of range, what is your tool for the trade right now in whatever creative space you're in?
My tool of the trade would probably be my sketchbook. My sketchbook kind of doubles as like a notebook. Like, I'm jotting down, you know, colors that I see.
Aesthetic realities.
I'm literally trying to, like, you know, transform.
That should be word of the day.
That is
word of the day.
But take that other shit in the clown car.
Yeah. That other shit, gutty, whatever the fuck it was.
I feel like a clown car is an aesthetic reality. Like, yeah. It's like a metaphor, an image that it creates in your mind. Like, you know.
And we all wrapped up. So I guess my creative tool? What is it called again?
Tool of trade.
My tool of trade, very similar to the map. You won't find me anywhere without a pencil, and my notebook. It has to be a pencil. I need to feel the scratches.
Yeah,
feel it.
Yeah. And you can find me at BMO Brown on all podcasts. Make sure y'all go check out the Funk Parade, funkparadedc.com. We about to get it in.
Word. Hey, Backpack Matt, you can follow me on Twitter at Backpack Matt and on Instagram at Mr. Backpack. But you can just call me Matt. My tool of the trade right now is Shopify. I just started to really dive into it. And now I see with how Shopify and some of these e-commerce platforms are making it easier to integrate with social platforms like Instagram.
Really? You know. I saw that. We'll talk about that on the next show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So
like when you can click and buy.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I want everybody, yeah, right? I want every sole proprietor in DC who is black to be able to benefit from that. So we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, it was a great episode.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.